If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Watch your back, son. I'm Luke.
I'm Captain Janeway of the USS Voyager.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation. It's a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys just a little bit embarrassed about having a Star Trek podcast. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison, sitting in a room that looks like a room, but is in fact a number of mosquitoes arranged in the shape of a room.
Three mosquitoes wearing a trench coat.
Yeah, getting into a movie with adult themes and also biting me. I am inside and I have like deep woods mosquito repellent on right now.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awful.
It sucks.
It has been a bad mosquito season this year in a place where mosquitoes aren't supposed to exist. Beautiful Los Angeles, California.
Yeah. Sucks.
I've been getting them myself. I heard one in the night in my ear last night.
Ugh.
That's a bad way to wake up.
No, don't like.
Hey, you know what else is a bad way to wake up? My wife told me this story just today. I have been sleeping so deep from being jet lagged or maybe not jet lagged or whatever it is when you're flying for 24 hours and 4 days and you're not all the way on London time or LA time.
Uh-huh.
I'm in the middle ground. Anyway, I'm sleeping great. I'm sleeping so great that there was a helicopter over our house last night that woke our dog up. And Ripley started voicing her displeasure. And I guess in my sleep, I turned to my wife and I covered her mouth with my hand.
Jesus.
Isn't that nuts? I have
that is bonk.
Zero recollection of this.
I was just watching a Nova documentary about brain science yesterday, and they had a whole segment in it about sleepwalking and how, like, parts of your brain can be on while other parts are off. And it sounds like whatever traveling 24 hours and 4 days did to you, maybe it did that specifically.
Never slept better. I recommend it.
This is reminding me of a little song I came up with. My wife and I went and stayed at a house with some friends in southern Italy right before the London show. Used the
Your Italian friends or American friends who went to Italy with you?
They're Americans.
Okay.
And one of the days we just made food there at the house, and I was making croutons out of some bread that had been bought a few days earlier and was no longer useful for bread purposes.
Real fresh croutons are the best, aren't they?
Yeah, frying them up in some butter, and then I was crushing tons of garlic and throwing it in there with while they were sautéing, and I came up with this little ditty. I smell the croutons that you eat when you're talking in your sleep.
I love that song.
And I was doing it so much that everybody got it stuck in their head and they all hated me.
That song is such a great bass dive bomb. But like it's a bass ditty and then that boom. It's such a fun part.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Has your wife forgiven you for kind of unwelcome and unwanted mouth cover?
I got to tell you, like, I was horrified to hear that story. Like,
yeah, that's not a nice thing to do to someone. And even though you weren't doing it consciously, it's like, yeah, like, hard to
Hard to wrap your mind around having been that person.
Yeah.
Is this going to be another Pizzagate for you? Like, are people going to be like, Adam?
Boy, I hope so, because I love when accusations are leveled upon me and you without the accuser knowing all the facts of the situation. That's great.
It's fun.
But yeah, I mean, I didn't remember that. She says it's fine, and I believe her. She's like, yeah, it was weird. You must have really been sleeping deep. So I am, as ever, grateful to have such a forgiving wife.
Your wife's great.
I've always thought so.
Yeah.
What's the weirdest thing you've done in the middle of the night to your wife? We got to get you on the board, Ben. I can't be the only one hung out here.
Oh, yeah. Well, as long as we're crucifying hosts of Greatest Gen.
Yeah. Yeah, let's get us both up there on those Krauses.
I am not a sleepwalker. My mom has stories of when she was a kid, like, she would, like, sleepwalk out of her house and, like, down the street. Like, she really, really freaked her parents out a couple of times. I mean, she was, like, she was growing up on Air Force bases, so it was, like, relatively safe, you know, generally speaking. But I've not been a sleepwalker. I do, like, talk in my sleep, but my wife talks in her sleep a ton.
Oh.
And it's all incoherent. I don't hear the secrets that she keeps, and I don't smell the croutons that she eats because she always brushes her teeth before bed. My loss, right?
I can actually have interactions with my wife in her sleep when she's talking, but
oh, that's great.
I don't want to fuck with her like that, but she will, like, out of the blue say something, and then I will try to ask a question about the thing she says. And just like when she's awake, she becomes very frustrated with my inability to understand what she's on about. And that usually makes it a very brief conversation. Just like when she's awake.
You're just being shamed back to sleep.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I'm sleeping so deep. In self-defense.
Well, do you want to... see if anybody acts in a strange amount of self-defense on today's episode of Star Trek Voyager.
Oh, nice pivot. I didn't see that one hanging there, but there it is. Yeah, let's get into it, Ben. It's Star Trek Voyager Season 6, Episode 19, Child's Play.
Revert course.
Unless you've got something a little bigger in your torpedo tubes, I'm not turning around.
And we open during Science Fair Day.
Yeah.
And the exhibits are awesome.
The Borg's twins have grown some potatoes in weird dirt.
And they came up all weird.
Did you read that these weren't even real potatoes? These are resin potatoes.
I suspected as much because they are identical. But I also sort of thought maybe they were, like, photoshopped, like they just had one potato and they did, like, a clone stamp to put the second one in the shot. It just looked weird enough, and it's low res enough that it was hard for me to tell in what way specifically it looked weird.
I thought this would be a unique prop item to own. You know, I'm always looking for these, Ben.
Oh, yeah.
Always looking for a weird prop item. In the last episode, I really wanted that clear vertical bread box.
Oh, yeah.
Wasn't able to get that one. And I was like, well, what about these resin potatoes? Like, certainly they couldn't be that popular, right? So I go onto the It's a Wrap website, you know, the website that does all of the Star Trek auctions.
Yeah,
I type
sure.
in potato. Two results, separate listings.
Wow.
Already purchased by Garrett Wong.
So he got both of them? Or
he got Bofa, the potatoes. That guy is absolutely inundated with props.
He was stating the obvious again.
Share some with the rest of us, Garrett Wong.
Does he have, like, free time outside of just sticking on these prop auctions?
I don't know. I mean, maybe that's how their podcast uses their producer, like just to win prop auctions. We work with our producer for serious work.
Yeah, yeah. Our producer is actually...
We would never give her a menial task.
No, never.
How about new?
Not on my watch.
Not once.
So the job of an adult at a kid science fair is primarily to be excited about how cute things are, right? Like, sure. You got to really overdo it at a children's science fair.
Mazzotti has done a sort of 3D ant colony.
I like bugs.
Well done.
Naomi Wildman just has a globe. Like, she literally just went and bought a globe, looks like.
People seem impressed by Naomi's science fair display. But I gotta say, like, deeply, deeply down the list compared to these other ones.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a good look for Naomi Wildman. I think they're humoring her.
I actually looked for this globe on that auction website you mentioned earlier.
Oh, yeah?
Ethan Phillips bought it.
Cut to, like, 2 foot-shaped cutouts in it.
But Garrett Wong got the first annual Voyager Science Fair banner. So, you know.
See, that's fun.
Yeah.
That's the kind of stuff I want. Like, I don't have a lot of room in my studio for, like, actual things, but things I could put on a wall. I got a lot of wall space because these walls go all the way up.
Yeah, they sure do. You got high ceilings. You might have higher ceilings than I do.
Yeah. How high do you think your ceiling is? I think these are 20-foot ceilings in here.
Yeah, I think I'm working with 12 maximum.
Damn.
It's a weird building. We both have weird buildings that we're in.
They're so fucking bizarre.
Yeah. So Icheb has actually done a science experiment. You know, like when you were a kid and your science project was like papier-mâché volcano that you pour baking soda and vinegar into. And then there's another kid that like did actual science. You know, you're like, fuck.
Yeah, but that kid wishes he did the volcano, right? Everyone wishes volcano.
Yeah, I mean, volcano is fun. Did you have a science fair project when you were a kid?
I remember being involved in it, but I also remember volcano being off the table.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I think a parent knows when to discourage volcano if their child isn't ready, because I would have just gone in there for the biggest pop, right?
Yeah, yeah. I think that volcano was just a class project at my school. And then I don't know if I ever had a science fair. I don't think that happened at my school. It's a shame.
Do they have science fairs now?
Yeah, I went to a science fair in the White House one time, the Obama White House.
Listen to you getting White House invitations.
Yeah, and the guy that played Kumar from Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle was the guy running it because he was like the youth outreach ambassador or something.
Wow. Were there volcanoes made out of mini hamburgers? There. That sounds like fun.
Yeah. I was really starstruck. I saw him and the president on the same day.
Jeez.
Yeah.
I suppose the only volcanic explosion related to White Castle happens after you eat it.
Oh, snap.
This is a science project that Ichip has made that is so serious, so adult, so useful that like the overly kind, oh, that's cute vibe that the adults have given all the other children is replaced with a, oh, shit, we could actually use that.
Yeah.
Kind of react.
It's like a scanner that can find the types of neutrinos that come out of space buttholes and maybe help them find a way to get home a little quicker.
Yeah.
You know, they can just plug it into their existing scanners. And Seven is like, you know, talking to Janeway off in the corner, and she's like, yeah, like I think this kid's really got a knack for engineering and astrometrics and science in general. And, you know, I think he's kind of gearing for a permanent posting in the lab. And Janeway's like, hey, I don't think that's going to happen, man. I think he's going to be off the ship a lot earlier than, you know, he would have time to qualify for such an illustrious position among the crew.
Janeway points to a sign in the mess hall we haven't seen before that's now illuminated, which is stop. Like, they're going to make the next stop to drop off Ichip on their way home.
Oh, yeah. Those windows along one side of the mess hall that they have that, like, cable hanging from the top, and she pulls on.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Poor Ichip doesn't know this yet. He's leaving.
Yeah.
And it's Seven's job to tell him.
They found his parents and are looking to reunite Icheb with those parents. He's not going to be Seven's problem any longer.
Yeah, this should be good news for everyone involved, right?
Yeah. So after the theme, she comes down to the ass lab and finds Icheb in there. And she's like, I have something important to tell you. And he's like, wait, first, let me tell you not much about how I'm just fascinated by science.
This is classic kid shit. Like when it's bedtime and you're stalling. Wait, I'm doing chores. See? Chores.
Look, I'm putting toys in the toy box. Yeah, so his little soliloquy about how passionate he is about space science kind of makes it hard for her to spill the beans about this situation.
Yeah.
So she's like, all right, just, once the chores are done, get to bed. And she pays a late night visit to Janeway in Janeway's quarters to confess that she's having some nerves about telling Icheb what's up.
It's weird how Janeway does not see Icheb as like a Voyesley Crusher type. Like, like he could be useful to keep around. She's right. Not thinking that way at all.
No, I think that the, despite Seven's nerves about hurting his feelings, these are two women that are extremely motivated to get the fuck rid of this guy.
What do you make of Janeway wearing pips at night?
Well, she's just
wearing, doesn't need to wear those pips.
She just took off her action jacket. She just hasn't completely got into her civvies yet.
I kind of feel like when you're the captain, do you even need to wear the pips at all? Are you above the pips?
Oh, man.
I think so.
Man, if I had pips, I'd wear them all the time. I'd be wearing them right now.
That's really it, isn't it? Like, once you get that fourth pip, you got to show them off.
Yeah. You got to get it on.
Seven refers to what Icheb will have to do as reassimilation. And boy, that is a very specific term, huh?
Yee.
Sounds pretty cutting.
Yeah. And Seven's like, Captain, that's our word.
You are not allowed to refer to an A unless you are a B.
We are now way past Icheb's bedtime, and Seven goes down to the cargo bay, and he's still up screwing around with neutrino trajectories.
Yeah. When's this kid going to fucking get some act right?
Yeah.
It used to be that Seven was a real strict mother figure. Not anymore.
No. He's like one of these screw-around sci-fi kids that just wants to go to Tashi Station to pick up some power converters. You know?
Yeah.
What a lowlife.
You can waste time with your friends when your chores are done. Now, come on, get to it.
Seven, is this your idea of a good time to tell a kid that he's going to be reunited with his parents?
Yeah, she like suddenly rips the Band-Aid off.
Voyager is due to arrive at their planet tomorrow.
Right before he's about to go to bed, and he's like, I don't even know those guys. He totally, I don't know hers, his parents.
I don't know her.
Yeah, I mean, there's that, but there's also like, he really inflates his own sense of importance around the other kids too. I mean, Seven's the leader here, right? Icheb is not second in command of the kids.
They depend on me.
They'll adapt.
I think that's a little presumptuous, right?
Yeah. I mean, although, like, the way Borgs hierarchicalize themselves when they're disconnected is a little bit inscrutable. Like, for example, that time the tertiary adjunct was bossing around the primary and secondary adjuncts.
Yeah, you can't have that.
Our course is locked in.
Do it.
Listen to me very carefully, because I'm only going to say this once.
Do it.
Speaking of Borg's continuity, Seven says something about how she never saw her parents after they were assimilated.
Yikes.
We know that's not true. We saw her dad.
Yeah. Uh-oh. Don't love the implication of that.
Yeah. Like, is that not your dad anymore, Seven? Is that what you're saying?
I really like how they bulk up all of the reasons that Icheb shouldn't be excited to go home to his homeworld. Like, I love the unintentional comedy of Seven being like, yeah, your people are farmers and their ships are shitty and they live on a very bad planet that's been totally blown out by the Borgs, like, repeatedly. And, yeah. and Icheb hears all this and he's like, God, that's weak. This sucks.
Do they even have power converters?
Do they even have video games there?
Do they know what neutrinos are even?
You need to be on his side early. I really think this is an important scene. Like, yeah. Not a lot of reasons for him to be excited here.
The next morning they pull up to this planet. And it is a real shithole. It's, I mean, you can just see from the surface, it's like a bad color of planet.
It is a bad color.
They're talking about how, like, it's pretty sparsely populated and it's little scrappy outposts. It's in a bad neighborhood. It's near a transwarp conduit. So Borg cubes are just flying out of that thing toward this planet all the time.
Yeah, but Ben, those views... Pretty good place to put a starter house, I think.
Yeah, it's sort of the worst planet on the best block.
And that's what you want, I think.
You know, I see this neighborhood turning around in 5 or 10 years. This is an investment that's only going up.
I heard a Whole Foods has got plans for this street.
And, you know, do I feel a little bit guilty about the families that are being displaced because they can no longer afford the neighborhood? Yes. But am I in charge of how the economic system works? No.
Janeway has been all about giving people asylum over the course of the show. Even those who don't deserve it, don't ask for it, whatever. But with Icheb, she's like, there's something about him I don't care for. Something that makes people uncomfortable to be around. Like, don't you think it's weird how she's not even neutral? She's like, this is the right choice to make. The reuniting of him with his parents.
Yeah. So Seven goes down to meet up with Icheb, and we cut to the six bay where he is getting his checkout diagnosis from the EMH, and he's got a bad case of butterflies.
I don't know. I think he was misdiagnosed. I think this is clearly irritable kid syndrome. Kind of a lot of lip coming off of Icheb here.
Yeah.
Parents are irrelevant, really.
You know, it's a very relatable displeasure he has. Like, Brunelli culture sounds incredibly mid, and he is excited about his newfound love of space science, and those guys just don't have a lot to offer in that department.
I don't know how often this happened to you when you were growing up, but it definitely happened to me all the time, and it's definitely affected the way that I interact with kids, which is like an adult making an assumption about how a kid is feeling about a certain thing, and frequently assuming the positive feelings about whatever that is, you know?
Yeah.
Like, the doctor totally blows this with like, oh, these are good butterflies. You got to be so psyched to get down to that pile of trash planet to be a farmer with your parents, much in the same way that, like, I don't know, when I was growing up, I was not excited to do many, many things that my parents would be like, oh, you are going to be thrilled to be signed up for this sports league that you showed no interest in previously. Like, shit like that.
Yeah.
And on and on and on. And it's really changed, like, when I talk to my friends' kids about what they're interested in or what they're doing, like, I never assume excitement. Because I just remember knowing how shitty that felt and, like, how bad it made me feel to, like, not be on the same page in a situation, right?
Why do I feel like I'm being subtweeted right now?
Because you feel this way too.
I just feel like you're trying to tell me how to be a parent.
No, not at all.
No, that's a real thing. And like my wife and I have found ourselves trying to make a conscious effort to try and like measure, like, you know, our baby doesn't speak any languages yet, but like there's, you know, when a baby is crying, there's an instinct to say like, it's okay, it's okay. And that feels like it really invalidates a situation where
you get in there with a talk bah, talk back.
I mean, it's very clearly not okay. So we're trying to just be conscientious about, like, you know, being available for his feelings, whichever ones they happen to be. But
sometimes it's not okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's a good idea to not train your kid, or in my case, your puppy, to think that things are okay when they're not.
Yeah. So speaking of it's not okay, Seven walks into Six Bay and it's like, oh, fuck, are you hurt? And he's not hurt. He's ready to go.
I think these butterflies are starting. Can you give me anything for the nausea?
Yeah.
Doc.
I love the establishing shot of this planet. Really great matte painting. You can see there used to be huge cities, and now it's all rubble, and like the settlement that they're beaming down to is in the middle of a huge crater that seems to have been part of a classic Borg's scoop everything up off the surface of a planet attack.
I like the canonical scooping of a Borg's attack. It's nice.
Do you think they have a special ship for that, or is that done by the cube?
Well, if you look closely at the green beam that a Borg's ship shoots, much like a 7-Eleven Slurpee straw, there is kind of a hole and a curvature at the bottom.
There's a little spoon.
Yeah.
At the bottom.
That's how you get up the bits at the bottom of the planet.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the part that kind of carves out the section that they pull out of the saucer of the Enterprise, right?
The Borgs are constantly looking for the ice cream at the center of the shave ice.
So we meet Icheb's birth parents, and they seem pretty nice. There's a little bit of like combative chilliness coming from Seven at these folks, and they are admirably tolerant of it. Like once they learn like who Seven is and what her deal is, like I think they're a little scared of her at first, and then are super cool about the situation.
Yeah, I mean, it's awkward, and it's depicted as awkward in the way that it should be. You just hate to see, God, there's something so visceral about like a parent asking a kid, how are you? And having that be just exactly the wrong question to ask in a moment like this.
Yeah.
It's just so awkward. I hated to see it. And of course, like, mom and dad are just getting their nuts totally clobbered by Icheb here. Because not only are they asking the wrong questions, they're like exactly the wrong people he needs to be with at the moment, you know?
I would like to return to Voyager now.
He has really been acculturated by Seven of Nine and his Borg's experience, and these, you know, salt-of-the-earth farmer people just aren't the vibe right now.
I mean, his parents are one thing, but then, like, his dumb brother is across the way, like, digging a hole or whatever.
I love how Yivel, Icheb's brother, is always depicted as yelling at him from far away.
That was so funny to me at every point.
At every point, Yivel is like no closer than like 30 yards away going like, hey, Icheb, let's go play baseball later.
Icheb's like, who are you? And he yells from across the way,
my name is Jeff.
My name is Jeff.
We haven't used that sound effect in a long time. I wanted to put it in.
This meeting doesn't go great, and it's followed up by a second meeting up on the Entrepreneur. It's sort of a McLaughlin adoption.
Issue one.
It's got real parent-teacher conference vibes, right?
Yeah, and this is sort of, it's sort of mediated by Janeway, and it's Icheb's parents on one side of the table and Seven on the other, and Seven is kind of putting these people on the grill and asking them a ton of tough questions. How are you going to continue his studies? How are you going to take care of all of his unique medical needs? Like, what about recharging mats? Do you have USB-C yet? Are you still on USB-A?
Seven.
No, it's all right, Captain.
There is nothing wrong with the questions that Seven has here. It's just the way that they're asked.
Yeah. They're just not used to like being hit with such pointed demands the way they're getting hit with. And they have a lot of poise under this pressure. But like later, the captain is like, hey, Seven, like maybe knock it off with being totally without tact.
I know you don't want to do it.
Do it. Coffee black.
Make it yourself.
I'm trying to help you see this as an opportunity to grow.
Make it yourself.
Did you, in retrospect, feel manipulated by a scene like this? like knowing what you know later about how much there was to hide about the parents' relationship with Icheb, like to a certain extent, the story is intending to mislead you in a way that many stories do for plot.
I liked this, though, because I think that it sort of continues that storyline of Seven being a reluctant hero to these kids. Like, she has been put in the position of being their caretaker and supervisor and parenting them to some extent. And now, with as much as she resisted that role and how, you know, uncomfortable it was to her at first, she's now, like, being the kind of protective parent that she never thought she would become.
Yeah. I do really like the scene for Seven in the way you're describing. And I do really like the scene in general for just how crackly this conflict is between them.
Yeah.
It feels totally charged.
Because they're like, instead of space science, he could study agriculture. And she's like, he doesn't care about agriculture.
He doesn't want to know about agriculture. He does like you. And Seven produces a trapper keeper with a nubbin bug in it.
And they're like, what is that? Some kind of, like, is that going to, like, help pollinate our crops? And she's like, yeah, something like that.
What do you know of conspiracies, Captain?
Not nearly enough, I suppose.
I love the idea of, like, break glass for nubbin bug. And just, like, in the middle of any episode, like, what if you just dropped a nubbin bug bomb into it? What would happen?
We're 20 minutes from the end and a nubbin bug shows up? What?
Instant favorite episode. Legendary episode. Janeway's like, Seven, you need to leave. Like, we can't have you in here like this. And like, she excuses her so that Janeway and the parents can like be alone for the last part of this meeting. And Janeway has a suggestion here that I think makes a lot of sense. Why don't the parents spend some time on Voyager so that Icheb can get to know them in a familiar place? And that sounds nice. That's good.
Yeah.
The parents are like, is Seven going to be on the ship during? Because she seems kind of unhinged.
Yeah. Do you have like a Delta flyer you could send her on a field trip in something? Janeway kind of rang Seven for the stunts she was pulling in this meeting and says like, hey, listen, like I understand why you're defensive and wanting the best for Icheb, but
there's coffee and a little more tact.
You know, you got to sort of let Icheb make the call here. Like you trying to control his destiny is kind of giving overprotective parent and that's not really what he needs right now.
Yeah. This is a really interesting scene for how it's blocked, right? Because it begins with that rail in between them.
Yeah, and the captain higher than Seven.
Yeah, and when Seven discloses the reason she's so upset, being that Icheb's parents remind her so much of her own, Janeway comes out from behind the rail as if the block has been removed and they can get on the same ground with each other. It's really great.
The hubris that these parents have of like, we know what's, you know, even though we live in, you know, essentially a Borg firing range, we can protect him as well as anybody, smacks of the same kind of hubris that the Hansons had to Seven. And that's a deep-seated wound that she is feeling like she's reliving here. And it's not going to feel good.
I really, really liked how that tied together.
Yeah. I thought that was great writing.
At no point is there like the third part of the argument, though. Like there's the danger of raising a child on a planet under constant Borg's attack. There is the danger of parents bringing a child on a science mission field trip aboard a ship to study the Borgs in the mist.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also, completely unremarked upon, the danger of being on Voyager at any given point. As well, right? It's not like the Voyager is a safe place either.
No, it is not. But this episode really does make Voyager feel vastly safer than that planet. Like,
yeah, yeah.
When they walk around on that planet and go like, nice planet sitting gig you got here. This place is a dump.
Just wait till you see the pool.
There aren't many nice places on that planet.
the kids are hanging out in the cargo bay, and this is all the kids, including Naomi Wildman. They're playing that game from a previous episode. Mazzotti is asking each Ebb a million questions about, like, what's going to happen when you go live with your mom and dad? Like, what's going to happen? You know, we don't remember our parents. Do you remember yours?
Are you finally going to stop acting like you're the boss of us or whatever when you get the fuck out of here? I think Mazzotti sees her angle. Like, she's going to be the leader once each Ebb's gone.
Yeah, this is great for her.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of a just like a bunch of slickbacks hanging out in a room together, which
yeah. Just a bunch of slickbacks fighting over the pomade and the leadership role.
They were like, Next Generation had three slickbacks. What if Voyager had five slickbacks?
It's too many slickbacks.
Yeah,
I think
it's like fuck it, we're going to five blades.
You know? In walks Seven with a dinner invitation from Icheb's parents, and it's really less of an invitation and more of an order, right?
Yeah, orders is orders.
I'm not going.
Your attendance is not optional.
She takes him down to Neelix's restaurant where they're going to do this in a public setting, which I was like, this is kind of canny, actually. Like, get the family together, but do it in a place where there's like some social pressure not to scream and like flip the table over and stuff.
There's a theory that's been a part of the Doughboys podcast universe forever, which has been like the Panera Bread is a place where difficult domestic news is shared. Like, it's perfect for that. And it kind of seems like Neelix's is the Panera of Voyager. Because I, too, was shocked that this wasn't a private dinner in someone's quarters. Even more awkward is that Icheb's parents hold down a foretop, but have to tell Neelix that it'll be three tonight.
Oh, God.
That sucks.
And he's like, come on, we're slammed. Like, what are you doing to me? Like, Icheb is pretty reluctant to sit down with these people and pretty reluctant to eat their food because his mom is saying, like, oh, yeah, like, this used to be your favorite. And he's like, well, you know, like, I just eat Borg recharge mat power now. I don't really mess with food.
Unless there's a charging mat on that seat I'm not aware of. I think I'm better off standing.
But those nostalgic flavors, man, they work every time. Unless you've been changed at the genetic level to be a different type of alien, in which case your favorite food doesn't taste good anymore.
No offense, but it's got sort of a metallic flavor.
There was a geometry to, like, the dad defending mom to get the kid to be nice here that made my skin crawl. This is maybe just a personal sensitivity, but yikes. I did not like that. If you want to make your mom happy, you'll eat the meal that she worked so hard to make. I mean, it works out here, but if that's going to be how things work in their family going forward, there's going to be a lot of simmering resentment.
Well, yeah, but in this case, you do see the ice start to break a little bit, and Seven sees the ice start to break and has to leave the room.
Where she goes and downloads cooking classes immediately. Because she's going to make a meal that Icheb is going to love.
Computer, load holodeck program Julia Child 00 Alpha 7.
Program loaded and ready.
Hello!
So the next day on the planet, they're hanging out in their shitty settlement where they do have a pretty impressive grow op going. Dad is showing Icheb around, showing him all the...
Do you think it grows so well because there's an open sewer pipe venting through town? I did not like this establishing shot of like the thick brown water just rocketing out of a cylinder like 8 feet wide.
And like right at the settlement too. It doesn't really
I
look
know.
Like it doesn't look like it's going around the settlement. It looks like it's going through.
If I were a city planner down there, I'd establish my settlement up pipe.
I really wanted to know like what the production secret was behind this, because like did they in fact like go to a quarry or something and like pour tons of dirty water through a pipe to get this establishing shot? Or was that actually happening where they were?
It seems like a great comp. Like, you get the pipe footage, and then you you color time it to brown, then you drop it in there. There's your brown pipe and your brown water.
Color Time It to Brown was the name of your memoirs, right?
Yeah, truly is. It's impossible to get non-GMO produce here, is Icheb's father's point, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they have really fucked with the genetics of all the vegetation.
They're making it work, though. Their planet's totally fucked up, and they have great gene editing technology. And this is actually kind of intriguing to Icheb. He's like, you know, this is kind of a cool type of science. And he's trying to talk to his dad about it, but then his brother is like, hey, Icheb! Maybe later we can go to Tachi Station and pick up some power converters. Are you into that kind of shit?
Icheb! Remember me? My name is Jeff.
My name is Jeff.
I had a couple of lines in an earlier scene, and these are the last ones I'm going to have. I'm not much of a character at all. Kind of confusing why they even left me in the script.
All right, Eric Ritter reading for Yevil. Go ahead and begin whatever you want. So it says in the parenthetical I'm just supposed to be yelling as loud as I can. Like, all the dialogue? Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
There's about 30 people in the waiting room, so if you get on with it.
Like, the waiting room the entire day is just hearing the yells from behind a construction-grade door.
They cast a guy that didn't nail the cadence of Icheb's name also.
Welcome home, Icheb.
That's funny. Yeah. You know what? He may not be able to articulate the words, but he's got that yell.
Yeah. He's off in the bathroom going, Icheb! Icheb! Icheb!
Jeff!
Icheb! Icheb!
My name is Jeff.
Dad tries to paint a rosy picture of the future of their society. Look, if you want to play with spaceships, you're going to have to build them yourself. It's basically his point. Not sure I love that takeaway here.
No. But Seven beams down like mid-conversation and restarts this tug-of-war she's been having with Icheb's parents about whether Icheb is staying or going.
It's unfortunate to see Seven beam down like in the high heels on a dirt planet.
Yeah.
Like, I wish they didn't take the wide shot of her on the beam down.
She would look great in a pair of Doc Martens. Why can't she have some boots or something?
Yeah. Yeah, something with a heavy lug.
Yeah, something with some gription for the loose dirt.
A heavy lug is made for walking through mud and dirt environments.
The floor of your bar is a mud and dirt environment? That's disgusting!
Get yourself a floor squeegee!
The only refuse I want to see on the floor of your bar is peanut shells. We're turning this into a peanut shell dive bar.
The camera racks over to the wall where, like, there is an enormous menu, like a wall-sized menu under the name Peanut Shell Bar. I've given you 30 POS systems.
East Coast Barstool worked overnight to get these chairs in here.
Each chair has skis on the bottom for sliding over the peanut shells.
And I got a subscription to Bartender so you can find out how much profit you're getting from your peanut shells.
Seven's like, time for bed, Icheb. And Icheb's like, nah, I'm going to stay here. I want to sleep with mom and dad. And Seven's like, well, you don't have a recharge mat down here. I don't see how that's really possible. And Icheb's like, well, why don't you build me one? You're not my mom. And so Seven does with Icheb's dad.
This is kind of a good look for Seven. Like, she comes down prickly and defensive and realizes, I think, over the course of this scene that this is not going to be a battle she wins by being defensive and shitty to Icheb's dad.
Especially in public, and especially 200 yards away from Ichab's brother, like where he can definitely see the awkwardness of this interaction.
Hey, it seems like a weird footwear choice for beaming down here. Why don't you get some Doc Martens?
Hey, is that an awkward interaction over there? It kind of looks awkward based on the body language. I mean, I can't really hear what you're saying.
Is the body language awkward because she's having a tough time standing in the loose dirt and rocks of our planet's surface? Or am I actually picking up on an emotional situation?
Is my job really just to squeegee the raw sewage that runs through town? Because I'm going to be doing this all day.
What do you guys think about it? Picking everything up and moving our settlement up pipe a little bit.
So Seven sets up Ichab's dad, Lucan, with a portable charging pad that's, you know, battery powered. So it's not going to last forever, but it's going to be good enough for tonight.
It's good enough for travel, right? It's like kind of like the travel kit that we have to take on tour.
Yeah, exactly. And they have a pretty interesting discussion here about how and when Ichab got nabbed. I've wondered, because they were really surprised at how tall Ichab was when he first beamed down. And I wondered if he was like much younger to them when he first showed up. He explains that he got nabbed 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if the Borg maturation chamber is supposed to like accelerate growth, but it sort of makes sense, right? You don't want a ton of baby Borgs on board your ship.
No, baby Borgs are useless. Baby Borgs are Bible buggers. God's
favorite game. Yeah, he shares this like sad story about Ichab having been real into agriculture science and like run off, you know, without supervision and gotten...
Ben, is that their idea of a fertilizing array? Is that what the brown pipe is? Like, they give it a very sciencey name. Oh, yeah, that's our fertilizing array. It's just a sewer pipe.
Yeah, I've been calling my butt my fertilizing array for a long time now, so that would make sense.
Yeah, you know, I used to like experimenting in fertilizing array stuff.
It takes some prep, but it can be really satisfying.
Really harrowing story, right?
Yeah, and this like very evocative story of a parent having lost track of their kid for just moments and that having been enough for the unthinkable to happen. And he's been living with all this horrible guilt.
You know, we never had to worry about that with his brother. He's always been between 200 and 400 yards away from us at any given point.
Like, yeah.
Very far from the fertilizing array, really.
No Borg's gonna get me over here! Way too far away!
I'm covered in raw sewage! That's why I don't get to sleep it down!
Just try to put me in a maturation chamber. I'll brown that water right up.
The Borgs hate me. Too brown.
Very sensitive nose on a Borg.
So Lucan is like, so your parents must have been real busted up when the Borgs got you too, huh? And Seven's like, no, they were with me when I got.
Yeah, they watched it go in.
Yeah, and it's a touching little moment, and we get another touching moment in rapid succession down on the planet where Ichab is hanging out with mom and dad under the stars outside their little hovel. And
the sound of thick brown water slapping on the muddy floor next to them.
How late do you guys want me to keep at this? Because it's dark. I'm real tired. I can't even see what I'm doing anymore. I mean, I can smell what I'm doing.
I think there's a hole in my boot. Yep. Definite hole in my boot.
Turns out Liu Kang has a real interest in the stars himself. And this is great. Super relatable to Icheb. A really sweet moment between him and his parents. And the next morning, Icheb shows up in the ass lab to break some news to Seven. He does not have as hard a time breaking bad news to her as she does him.
Real talk, though. How sad is Icheb's brother to, like, not get invited into the stargazing or anything? Like, they fucking hate that guy.
Well, I think once you know the twist at the end of the episode, it makes sense that they're not, like, letting the other kids in their family get super close to Icheb.
Right, yeah.
But the darkness of this scene is that it is like the timeshare sales pitch. Like, you think that this person is your friend, that they are just trying to help you go on vacation for a much more affordable price and earn some equity in valuable beachfront property at the same time. And what they're really doing is scamming you.
Yeah, like the darkness of, the stars are really, really pretty tonight, huh? How'd you like to see them a whole lot closer? And through one eye, because your other eye's covered up with an ocular implant. Sounds great. Anything to get off this shift. I will take any job. You said I could work my way up. You promised.
So Icheb tells Seven, like, hey, I've decided that this is the place for me. I've reconnected with Mom and Dad, and I'm going down there. And she and Janeway take him to the transporter room and say their goodbyes. And Seven gives him some nice goodbye gifts, stack of iPads and a telescope. And he's like, oh, I'm not going to be needing that. They'll just implant one.
Yeah. She takes the letdown like a champ. You know, Seven doesn't take people leaving her very well.
Yeah.
We know this about her. Way to keep it tight, Seven.
Yeah. She's really repressing her abandonment issues very effectively in this scene.
Yeah.
And she and Janeway bid Icheb adieu, and we fade to black. This is a commercial break.
Maybe there's a fun commercial we could play there.
I've got to get that
platinum. Put your platinum where your mouth is.
I've got to get that
platinum.
I think we've just struck gold.
When I was growing up, I didn't have anyone to tell me about personal grooming. I had to learn these things on my own. So I'm here to save you some embarrassment and recommend the grooming tools that I use, the products from Manscaped. Now, this is a company that constantly has its mind on your bush. Imagine the meetings they have. Imagine the pictures they have in their PowerPoint presentations. Now imagine your junk looking its best thanks to the Lawnmower 5.0. This thing is the latest Bonch trimming technology with two interchangeable heads, a standard one for taking just a little off the top, and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants. Moms, can't live with them, can't find a great gift for them. It's madness, and it's the same every year. Mother's Day comes around, and it's like, what's it going to be this year? Another robe? Another candle? Slippers? A sweater? Flowers? We've got to do better than that, right? Well, you can, and it's actually the best gift you could possibly give a loved one. An Aura frame. Now, we have a policy to only do ads on our show for things that we actually like and use, and I gotta tell you, the Aura frame is probably the best gift I've ever given. The folks I've given an Aura frame to love it. And I love it too, because when you give an Aura frame, you're not just giving a person a bunch of old pictures, you're giving them new pictures. Every time you send one, do it. Right now, Aura has a great sale for Mother's Day. Viewers can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com, and the code is SCARVES at checkout to show your support for the show. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
One, I've got your attention. Coffee first.
Do it.
When we come back, it is Mazzotti Eyes 2, big reveal. Icheb was not captured in the way Daddy says. She's having a tough time recharging. She wakes Seven up on her charging mat and says, like, hey, I'm feeling real busted up over Icheb going. You know, Seven's trying to put her back to sleep, and this story comes out, like, the Borgs assimilated Icheb by capturing him in a ship, not by scooping him up off of a planet while his dad was looking in the other direction, probably at Yvel.
How does Seven not know this? This is a terrible bit of business.
Yeah.
So Seven calls Janeway to the ass lab, like, right after, and Janeway is pissed to be woken up.
Yeah, she is not finding a 3 a.m. fuck to give about this initially.
I had just taken off my night pips. Now I had to put them back on. This better be good.
And it's 3 a.m., so I was like, do I put the day pips on or I just get back in the night pips? Which is it?
The truth is, Icheb was on an unarmed transport when he was assimilated. And why would his parents lie about this? Why would they lie about the circumstances of his assimilation? Why would they lie about the sewer pipe that runs through town that they're calling a fertilization node or whatever? Why would they lie about how many years ago he was assimilated? It's weird. It doesn't add up. And Janeway's like, this sounds like a pain in the ass. Like, they both agree that, like, Seven's emotional about this and that, like, she may be more interested than she would be ordinarily, but running this down is a priority, and it seems like they're going to do it.
Yeah, like, Seven has to convince Janeway that Lucan lying about this must be for some untoward purpose, but she just barely succeeds. And before the Voyager gets back to the planet, we have this scene between Lucan and his wife, whose name I did not write down because I'm a bad person. And they're having a very diabolical sounding conversation. Like, they're talking about, like, yeah, he was born to do the thing that he did. He's not an ordinary child. We got to sacrifice him again. Like, his return was the gift that we never thought we would get. We got to take advantage of this. And the dad is like, maybe we don't. Maybe we just keep hanging out with him. And Yuval's like,
I don't know. I mean, like, has anybody really gotten to know the guy? I've been 400 or 500 yards away from him for most of the time, so I wouldn't know. Like, what's he like?
I mean, maybe we could switch shifts at some point. Like maybe he could work out here for an afternoon.
Has anybody thought to ask him how he is with a squeegee?
Icheb walks in completely oblivious, and he gets a "we need to talk" here, but there is very little talking to be done and a whole lot of shooting him in the neck with some kind of drug.
Yeah, pretty shocking turnabout for these parents who seemed super cool and chill the entire time.
It's wild how visceral a hold him down is in a moment like this, right?
Yeah.
Ugh.
I couldn't believe that they were able to overpower him, though. Like, he's like so much taller than them, and he's like Borg augmented.
It would be great if he still had his assimilation nodules, right? Because then he'd be like, fap, fap.
Yeah, now he's part of the no-fap movement.
And then he shoots the nodules out the window, like between 300 and 600 yards to where his brother is. Long distance fap.
Hey, Ichab, something just hit this tree next to me. You know what that was? Did you throw something?
The tree just turns into half machine, half tree.
Hey, that's just like the next Transformers movie where everything is a Transformers now.
When they get into orbit, they get on FaceTime with Ichab's mom and dad, and they're like getting readings like while they're talking to them that there is a ship like leaving the planet's surface, traveling at high warp toward the Borg's hole.
Mm-hmm.
They're talking to these people about like, what did you do to him? And they're like, this is what he was always meant to do.
He wants to do this. And they scan the ship and Ichab's unconscious on there. They're like, I don't think so.
Here's the twist, Adam. The pathogen that was fucking up the ship that they found Ichab and all the other Lilith Borgs on was from Ichab. It's like genetically engineered into his birdie. And when Borgs assimilate him, it fucks the Borgs up. And his parents genetically modified him using the genetic modification technologies they developed for their plants to create an Ichab weapon and send it to the Borgs.
Do you think when the Borgs went down to the planet, like they ate some of the vegetables and they're like, hey, 3 of 8. Oh, this cucumber tastes bad. This is really bad.
I should have smelled it first. I got a very powerful sense of smell. And
Hey, 1 of 14. Put down the broccoli. Trust me on this. You're not going to like what happens.
Hey, I think the Borgs aren't falling for eating the vegetables.
The Voyager is going to go rescue Ichab from this ship that's basically headed straight for Borg space. And the Borg rescue sequence is really exciting and like daring and dynamic. Like they have to like beam Ichab out and beam a torpedo into the ship that like is getting sucked into the Borg sphere. And then, you know, the Voyager has to warp away just at the right moment.
I love the decision to compose the shot not showing the entire sphere.
Yeah.
Like to show the relative size between the two in such a way where like you don't even see the whole Borg ship until it explodes, I mean.
I also just love the like dynamics of the Borg sphere wasn't even going for Voyager. It was going for the ship Ichab was on, but they're like, they're behind it. So they're stuck in the same tractor field.
Yeah. I love how they cut down to the planet surface and Ichab's brother is like, hey, I heard a big boom. I heard something really loud.
Is it the 4th of July? Like people setting off fireworks? What is that? Hey, has anyone seen Ichab? Like, he was supposed to be moving back in with us, and I haven't seen him around all day.
Hey, my other boot has a hole in it. Like, whoever needs to know that, I need some new boots.
Maybe Ichab, grow out of his and I can, have him as a hand-me-down?
So in 6-Bay, the doctor tells Janeway and Seven about Ichab's being a weapon with one goal, releasing his pathogen onto the Borgs and killing him the way that he did the first time. Like, he's already done this.
Yeah.
We know it's a great success as mission goes.
I thought this was such a great payoff of a mystery that I didn't even really think of as being a mystery that they were setting up.
Yeah. So they didn't need to synthesize the pathogen earlier when they had Beatus in the vial in that same frame, right?
Oh, yeah.
They could have just milked Ichab for that. So we left Ichab alone in his quarters and went back later and were able to find kind of a lot of the pathogen in there.
Found a Nike shoebox full of pathogen under his desk.
Yeah, so I don't think we'll need to make it synthetically.
Seven finds Icheb in the ass lab and he's looking at his own genetic sequence, and he actually kind of respects the choice that his parents made. Like the like send me to kill all Borgs to preserve their way of life. Seven is on the other side of this issue. She's like, no, that's barbaric and horrible. And this is like a pretty familiar argument we've seen in Star Trek. Like, can you xenocide the Borgs and feel good about it or not?
What is the more horrifying realization? That you've been genetically created to xenocide an entire species? Or that you've been made to wear a onesie made of clothing scraps that look like they could be from a Will Smith music video?
Yeah.
You know what I love about what he's wearing is all the colors seem like related to a Starfleet uniform without being a Starfleet uniform.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that looks like Science Officer Blue in there.
Bit like Wesley Crusher in that way.
Yeah.
He's like the I'm a Virgo of Wesley Crushers.
Maybe it was my destiny.
Well, it looks like we're not getting rid of Icheb.
No, he's staying on the ship. But did you like this episode, Adam?
You know, I'm really easy to get along with most of the time. But I don't like bullets, I don't like threats, and I don't like you.
What's funny about this episode is that, like, it really had an interesting question before it turned evil, which was, like, parents, do they really matter? Before, like, the big evil reveal of, like, oh, these are evil parents, we don't want them around. Like, before that part, it really made me think, like, where's Icheb gonna be? And who would really be better to raise him here? Like, it's interesting how this episode took such a sharp turn before answering that question. A question I'm still interested in the answer to.
Yeah.
But that turn is so crazy and scary that I can't help but respect it. I liked the episode a whole lot.
I did too.
I thought it was strong. And I think the strongest part was that similarity that Seven draws between her own parents and their irresponsibility. And before we know the true evil of Icheb's parents, like the irresponsibility that they're showing toward the safety of their kid. Like, I thought that was great. And I know we've watched a lot of episodes before where we've been like, well, why isn't Seven involved in this story? And why isn't she there to ask or answer questions like this?
Right.
It's just nice to get an episode where she's there because she's supposed to be there. And she's asking the questions and answering the questions that we would have in these moments. So, yeah, I liked it.
Totally.
What about you?
I feel like, you know, we're recording this like the next day after we recorded our episode from last week, Ashes to Ashes. And I thought that that was an episode that had a really interesting premise and kind of failed to connect the dots on some of the things that were most interesting about it, especially the, like, when do you decide to move on from somebody that you think is gone forever? And what would it be like to learn that they're not gone forever?
Yeah.
Being a theme that the Voyager crew would be uniquely interested in. And then the episode kind of like doesn't really take that up in a serious way. And
interesting back to back here, huh?
Yeah. So like this one being a way for us to explore Seven's feelings about the danger that her parents put her in and, you know, taking on the role of being the guardian of these kids and then being, you know, pushed by everyone around her to like loosen the leash a bunch. And then finding that when she loosens the leash and he decides to go away, it's like her worst fear realized, like,
yeah,
even worse than her worst fear realized. Like they were planning to kill him the entire time.
Yeah.
Not just be, you know, not as good and enriching an environment for him, but like the opposite. Like it was so well done and so well written. You know, I think that the themes of the episode were really fully explored and it asked interesting questions and answered them. And I really liked it.
We've got a couple more kids to go through this with. Like, I wonder if we'll actually realize the storyline as promised here initially with any of them. Like, I'm still very interested in the idea of what happens when we drop these kids off with their parents.
Yeah.
If they aren't evil.
What would it be like if their parents weren't evil?
Hmm. What about me? Do I get to stay with my parents now that we all know they're evil, or what?
No chance they've modified my genome, right? Right?
Hey, you want to know what's evil? Making me work shift after shift with holes in my boots.
How about modifying the gene for smelling poop?
All right, Ben, let's check our Priority One messages.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
But the interest alone could be enough to buy this ship.
Ben, our first Priority One message is of a promotional nature.
Okay.
And it's from our friend John Patrick Green over at the Investigators.
Okay.
Here's that message. Investigators is a graphic novel series about two alligators named Mango and Brash, who wear vests and solve crimes. Their seventh book is titled All Tied Up, spelled T-I-D-E, and has the dapper detectives searching for a lost cruise ship. If you know a slickback age 6 to 10 who enjoys silly puns, or an adult who enjoys obscure Star Trek references, some that only FODs will get, this latest adventure will be right up their alley, Gator.
Have fun.
Investigators, All Tied Up is written and illustrated by John Patrick Green and comes out on 9/26/23. Hey.
That's tomorrow.
That's tomorrow.
Wow.
So check out investigatorsbooks.com. That's spelled investigatorsbooks.com for animated trailers and fun activities. And to order the books online, or even better, visit your local independent bookseller.
Hell yeah. Hey, thanks for getting a P1, John Patrick Green, a person we've met in real life and who has been real nice to us over the years. Designed our trunks.
Mm-hmm.
I think these books are really great, and I think any kid in that age range and any FOD who wants to see some Greatest Gen references in print will really enjoy this. So I highly encourage people to grab this book.
Good stuff.
Investigatorsbooks.com.
Investigators! Mount up.
Brash and Mango. Mango and Brash. Our next Priority One message is from Laurel, and it's to Josh. It goes like this. Happy birthday to the most amazing guy you'd ever meet. Seriously, he's a nurse, a pilot, a perpetual optimist, and the best husband ever. Happiest of birthdays, Josh. Onward and forward to maximum adventures.
God, Josh sounds awesome.
Josh sounds cool as hell. God damn.
A nurse and pilot?
That's like a...
How does Josh have the time?
Josh is like a superhero. And managed to stay optimistic through all of that?
You know what's great about being a nurse and a pilot? You can tend to the onboard bedpans.
Mm.
Of a cross-country single-engine airplane flight.
But not on your birthday. Happy birthday, no. Josh.
Happy birthday, Josh.
Take the day off from tending to the onboard bedpans.
Keep that rating current. Our final Priority One message is from Rebecca, and it is to Neil, Rochelle, and Pierce. That message goes like this. Thank you all for giving up your summer, for being amazing, and for all the help. Also, super exciting to meet a couple of FODs in the wild, per se. I'm guessing Pierce isn't one yet, but just give him a couple years.
I don't know what this one's about, but it sounds like a bunch of people gave up their entire summer to help Rebecca, and that sounds like FODs, you know?
That's what FODs do.
They're a giving group.
They give up their summers for a good cause.
Yeah. Wow. Well, if you'd like to support a good cause like our show, one way you can do it is getting a Priority One message at MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron.
You don't have to give up your own summer to do it. It's just 100 for a personal message and 200 for a commercial message.
Yeah, we appreciate it. Hey, Adam.
What's that, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible.
Drunk Shimoda!
I'm over here!
I am too!
I'm the Shimoda! I'm just tending to all this sewer water. It's starting to get to me now.
They asked me to see if you could stack up a slurry of brackish water and feces like Jenga tiles, and I don't understand why.
Yeah, I mean, that's an easy one, right? You know what's fun about that Shimoda is we conjured that Shimoda during the episode.
Yeah, yeah.
Good stuff. Well, Ben, our game of buttholes, Will of the Prophets, was broken during our last episode.
I got to the bottom of this with Craig Anderson. Here's how technologically stupid I am. I was like, hey, Craig, what's going on? Like, were you mad at us about what happened with dinner in London? And he's like, no, I just logged into the account and your credit card is no longer up to date.
Cool. That's all. It was as technical as updating credit card information.
Yeah, so I feel very bad for having even given the whiff of a suggestion that it was anybody's fault but my own. It was mine. It was mine all along. And so, we're back in business, though. The board game is working.
Great.
I say we get this thing going. What do you say?
Ben, while I go over to the game of buttholes, the will of the caretaker, why don't you tell us what the next episode's going to be about?
It's season 6, episode 20, Good Shepherd. Janeway must tend to her flock when she finds 3 misfit crew members need some special attention. Did we already have this episode?
God, it seems like it.
Is this like a retread of that season 1 episode where Tuvok has the people like jogging around the ship?
Oh yeah, let's follow up with those guys.
Is that those guys?
Ben, our runabout is currently on square 83. That's the second row from the top, 4 squares ahead. We've got a Measure of a Man episode.
Oh boy.
It's really the only thing we're in any danger of hitting.
Okay.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
All right, I've got the die in my hand. Here we go. Ben, I've rolled a 6.
Okay.
Chula!
Did I win?
Hardly.
Which puts us on square 89. Nice.
Wow.
It's a regular old episode. How about that?
That's apt because this is episode 489 of The Greatest Generation.
How about that?
Yeah, fun.
Glad to have the game back.
Next week should be a fun one. In the meantime, why don't you check out our other show, Greatest Trek? Comes out every Friday. We're in the middle of reviewing Lower Decks episodes right now. Having a ton of fun with that. We haven't shouted this out on the show recently, which we've been remiss about, but we are still raising money for the Entertainment Community Fund. As of this record, the writers and actors here in the U.S. are still on strike against the AMPTP for fair working conditions in the entertainment business, and we really stand in solidarity with them. You can go to friendsofdesotoforlabor.com if you'd like to support that work. This is a fund that just kind of helps people out financially if they're out of work because the shockingly greedy assholes that run AMPTP have forced this strike.
Ben, I'm just checking on the amount raised so far. At the time of this recording, Friends of DeSoto have raised $7,784 for who I believe are those most instrumental in creating the entertainment that we love and the source material for the shows that we make.
Yeah.
So thanks to everyone for throwing in on that.
If you got a P1 for any of our live shows on our tour that we're on right now, those funds are also going toward that total. So we really appreciate everybody that goes to greatestgentour.com and gets a P1. And while you're there, get some tickets to a live show. We got a ton of fun shows coming up really soon. As of the release of this episode, we are gearing up for our big East Coast run. We'll be in Boston on October 3rd, Brooklyn the next night, Philadelphia a couple nights after that, and Washington, D.C.
The show is really crackling right now. I feel like it is a great live show, and we'd love to see you out at them.
Listen, we got a standing ovation in London.
Yeah.
That's something.
They don't give standing ovations to anyone. That's what Chuck Bryant said. They're yeah. like, look, these people don't laugh and they don't give standing O's. They did both for us.
Yeah, they showed us their O face. We got to thank a few people. Of course, Wendy Pretty, the producer and editor of this program, really doing a ton of extra stuff during the tour to keep the shows coming out on time, doing a great job of it.
Speaking of people just standing in flowing sewer water, sweeping it away, that is really the audio equivalent of what she's been doing lately.
Hey, Wendy, this job sucks, huh?
We really appreciate her efforts.
We sure do.
She's really the best.
We also appreciate the efforts of Bill Tilly, the card daddy, running the social media accounts at Greatest Trek. Reach out to those accounts if you want to send something in for a future Code 47. We have one of those coming right up, and I'm looking forward to that.
Dark Materia made the music you're listening to now. Adam Ragusea makes all the original music and interstitial music for the show, and has for quite a while.
Check us out online. Join a group of Friends of DeSoto, one of the many places on the internet that they gather. And with that, we will be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek Voyager, and episode of The Greatest Generation Voyager that really fucking slaps at the base.
Can't wait to find out what you mean by that.
Oh, wait. Does Tom Morello play guitar or bass? Fuck, he plays guitar!
Ha! Leave it in!
Wendy, I'm begging you. Cut that out. Ah!
I think so.
I'm gonna keep going down this tangent.
Maximum Fun, a worker-owned network
of artist-owned shows,
supported
directly
by you.